Hey, this is Rob McCollum, one of the producers of 1865, here with 1865 Inside the Episode for Episode 4. Joining me, as always, Eric Archilla and Stephen Walters, the writers of this project. Guys, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So, we learn a lot more about Lucy Hale in this episode. It starts right off the bat with, again, Stephen playing Robert Lincoln. Well done.
Well done.
With the Spanish lesson, and you realize that this is something he desperately wants and she's a little bit cold on. So what do we know about this? How much of this relationship do we know factually? How much of this is artistic license, Eric?
Well, we do know that they met the day of for Spanish lessons. He was helping to teach them Spanish because they were going to Spain, because that was Hale had not gotten reelected and was going to be the new diplomat to Spain.
And we also know that the story about them at the dance at the Washington Ball, where Booth cuts in and Lucy storms out, the whole love triangle between the three of them is a true story. We know that actually happened,
which we'll actually see play out in our bonus episodes.
And is referenced in episode 4.
Many, many sources have talked about that Robert Lincoln was one of her suitors. We also know that Booth was invited by Senator Hale to the inauguration to see Lincoln be sworn in. And so there was a connection there.
Yeah. And, you know, Hale is an interesting figure because he is one of the fathers of the Republican Party. He's a strident abolitionist, which was something that was not common, obviously, in his time. And just this idea that his daughter was cavorting with the murderer of Abraham Lincoln is pretty shocking. It leaves us with a lot of questions, like what did the senator know about his daughter's relationship with John Wilkes Booth?
And we see that a little bit later play out in some ways, using some of the factual things that we have.
Right. And in our story, Edwin Stanton uses this, what could be a crisis, which could certainly put the Republican Party in jeopardy. At the very least, it would malign them in the press and it would be a political scandal. You know, the president's murderer cavorting with the daughter of Senator Hale is a big story. And I think that the way that we use it in our story is that Stanton uses it to leverage Senator Hale, who is not too keen on the idea of compromising with Andrew Johnson.
Yeah, in your version of this story, that is the card that Stanton plays to make Hale play ball and take suffrage off the table, at least temporarily. And then it's all upended when Lucy goes to the papers the next day and says, he's innocent and I loved him. And tell me what happened with this real story.
This is one of the great mysteries of history. She did do this. She said he's innocent, he did nothing wrong, and she asks for exonerating evidence for her fiancé. And then, very mysteriously, the story is retracted. Senator Hale makes a statement to the press, and I think we even have this in a Telegraph in the story where they say it is explicitly denied by the Washington correspondent of this particular newspaper. Very mysterious.
One of the really cool things about the series is that, yes, we take some creative license in filling in the gaps, but a lot of the actual quotes, a lot of the newspaper articles, a lot of the telegrams are word for word. And we've tried to work in as much of that as we can because we want people's words to be their own. So a lot of the things that Wells or Langston or Stanton say actually are quotes from letters, from conversations.
And the newspaper article was the actual article. That's what it printed.
That's
some of the most verbose language, because we really tried to work hard. I know you guys worked really hard to make this conversational and approachable for a modern ear. But the things that stand out the most do so because that's the actual way they wrote newspaper stories in 1865.
Well, and think about it. Lucy goes to the paper and she says, John Wilkes Booth is innocent. Help me prove that he's innocent. And then the very next day, the story is retracted. I mean, that is
multiple papers.
Yeah, that's a shocking turn of events, right?
And who would have the power to do that but Edwin Stanton?
So another big piece of this story is trying to get, again, the president, Andrew Johnson, on side with the plans for the Freedmen's Bureau and giving the Freedmen's Bureau power. One of the ways that Stanton seeks to leverage him is the questions about who's going to speak at Lincoln's funeral. And this was an actual, you know, debate that happened.
They actually were not allowing any blacks at all to speak at Lincoln's funeral. And I know that there were a lot of civil rights leaders that were very upset about that. And they rightly so wanted to honor the man that gave them more progress than any other president.
And I believe that what we say in the story, which is true, is that the compromise that is struck over this question of who's going to speak at the funeral is that the Negro soldiers lead the funeral procession through the streets of Washington, which is what actually happened.
So what other thing that actually happened, not necessarily in the way that you've dramatized it, but we come in on Mary Todd Lincoln and a seance where she is trying to contact the spirit of her departed husband, Abraham Lincoln.
This actually happened, right?
We don't know if she had a seance for Lincoln, but they did have seances for their lost son, Willie. And we also know that Mary Todd was unwilling to leave the White House for a long time. They were very into the occult. And so, and which was kind of the thing of the times. It was the popular thing to do this.
Like Nancy Reagan going to speak in, you know, California with it. Yeah.
And so we put the two together of, she is the type of person that if her husband was taken away from her very suddenly, she would want to have a seance in the White House before she leaves and can never talk to his ghost again.
Also, I think it's great that in the way the scene is, like, Robert Lincoln is just not a fan of this journey that his mother is on and is like, oh, please, thank God for getting me out of this room.
Well, this is also one of the things that history does not tell us. It's a big question. Is Robert Lincoln never says anything, to my knowledge. Eric, you may have come across something, but to my knowledge, he never comments publicly on his relationship with Lucy.
Never.
Which I think is so unusual. I mean, certainly if we heard today in the newspaper that the president's son was having a relationship with, you know, someone who would, or say a Democrat who was the target of the man who sent those packages out. If we learned that one of the, you know, children of one of these Democratic politicians was sleeping with that person, or if a newspaper alleged that they were, certainly they would be asked to comment on it. So, you know, for the modern audience, at least for me, it feels very implausible that he did not comment on it. And yet he didn't.
But we do have that public incident between he and John Wilkes Booth at a ball, one of the inauguration balls, where they fought with each other, and several people were talking about that.
One other strange foible in the history of the time, and there's a great line at the end of the scene with Stanton and Robert, where he says, "How do you feel about trains?" Because this train procession of Lincoln's body was a new and rare thing. That is not a common occurrence, but they actually did do that.
I believe it was Stanton's brainchild, too. The idea behind the funeral train being that the people could see what the rebels had done to him and that it would galvanize the people's support.
And Robert did go on that journey with
him. He did. He went as far as Baltimore, and then he came back to Washington to help his mother move out of the White House, which we'll get into in a later episode. Spoiler. And then,
so the ending of this episode, the final scene of episode 4, is Stanton reading the letters between Lucy and Booth. And those are the actual letters, right?
The actual letters of them when they first met.
Which was, I guess, on Valentine's Day.
I think they believe it was either 62 or 63.
And Booth wrote the creepiest note of all time. He said that basically the short version is, "You remind me of this girl that I used to date who's now dead. And seeing you," his words are, it gave me a melancholy pleasure," which is not a normal phrase.
When Booth killed Lincoln, there was this big effort by everybody that knew him to burn everything that he had ever written to them because no one wanted association with him. So a lot of his letters and personal correspondence was destroyed. And one really cool thing that I found in this old acting book it's this person interviewing Edwin Booth talks about him going down to this basement with Edwin Booth and opening up a trunk of John Wilkes Booth's, and Edwin was finally ready to get rid of some things, and one thing he did was burn a giant stack of letters. And it's just fascinating to wonder, were those letters about this relationship?
What was in them? Well, speaking of letters and the research that you've done, I know at this point, you know, 15 years in, you have now in the thousands of documents that you both have read, but especially Eric on the research front. Talk a little bit about you guys' process of how this story has come about. I know this has been a long road. You are very different people. You come from very different perspectives. And so how have you managed to work together to combine this?
Well, it's ironic that you ask that question today. We are actually recording this episode on November 7th, 2018. Obviously, a very pivotal moments in America's history. Yesterday, we had the midterm elections. I think it's interesting to note that in a very politically divisive time, that Eric and I fall on very different sides of the political spectrum. What's interesting, though, is that, you know, we are longtime friends. And because of, you know, some of our political inclinations, we often interpret things in different ways. But I also think that we've learned things both from history and from each other about seeing things through someone else's vantage point.
Well, from a research perspective, it's been cool to see the two different sides of the story because they interpret things so completely differently. And so that's why when I've been doing the research, I've been trying to be sure that I'm reading from both sides so that we are getting an accurate perspective.
Well, and it's impossible to talk about the Reconstruction era without venturing into partisanship, even if you don't intend to.
Sure, there's no such thing as pure historical research because everything that you guys are looking into and every biography written at the time, is coming from a very distinct viewpoint of the person who wrote that. So you kind of have to parse that out.
Yes. Even the tribunal, which we'll get into later in the series, we don't know if the witnesses are telling the truth in that. It's so hard to know.
All right, so you talk about working with each other and having these different viewpoints. Was it stressful? Were there arguments? I want to know about this dysfunctional marriage that you guys have had for 10 years working on this project.
Eric and I are a little bit like Felix and Oscar.
We need to wrap this up in about 10 because we have a marital counseling session. Steve and I are kind of a good yin and yang. I think we work really well together. Our brains work in different ways. I think I'm detail oriented in a different way than Steve is. He's detail oriented on other things, and we just kind of blend really well together.
Yeah, we complement each other in a lot of ways. Eric is a very exasperating person. and I know because I can smell my own.
I will say there are times that I would often get to play the marriage counselor in those roles, like mediating between the two in service of the story, at least in trying to drive the adaptation into the podcast. But a little inside baseball for those of you listening, the play on which this is based has been morphing and changing and adapting along with the creation of the podcast. There's now an entirely new version of the play that has been doing stage reading recently that in a lot was kind of echoing the discoveries you made when building the podcast.
Yeah, and I think that what makes our creative partnership work so well is that we agree about the big question. We agree about the big thrust and you know, the reason behind the piece. You know, we agree that it's an ends versus means question. And so when you agree on the intention in the big sense, it's very easy to, debate and
on
hash
the granular
out.
Details.
Different ways and modes of approaching and achieving what the intended goal is.
So for those of you who are listening, if you love this story and want to see it actually with live people on stage, that might be something in the years to come that you might see a play version of this that currently is titled Mars, right?
That's right, yeah.
That's the eighth change, and I'm sure it will change again. But right now, it's
today
titled
it's
Mars.
Called Mars.
Yeah, you may be able to see that on stage near you soon. You also can listen to episode 5 to find out what happens next in this story. Lots more to unfold, lots more backstabbing, intrigue, real history. Guys, thank you so much for being here, and thank you for listening to Inside the Episode 1865. We will talk to you next time.